you mentioned this book that's in the back of your head. It's probably already written up there, so you just got to put it down on paper.
Yeah, I got to get it on paper.
But maybe go through some of the things that you have learned that are the don'ts, or the don'ts of church planting. I see a lot of guys really talking about this, and I think it's healthy online. I don't know how much in our circles it is in the URC. I think we need to talk about it more. I think we need to give more priority to it. But I do see a lot in other guys, other denominations talking about this. I see some really successful plants out there. I see some that always, they struggle. What have you learned?
Yeah, so the book we're joking about is the top working titles, How Not to Plant a Church or How Not to Plant a Reformed Church.
It'll sell better than How To, I think.
Yeah, I mean, How Not To's are as important as How To's, right? And my How Not To is every mistake I've made, And so I think we mentioned oversight. Like, it's just a single, I'll run through the list if any of them interest you.
Yeah.
If a single guy's passionate, that's fine. You need that passion. Yoke it to a healthy overseeing church. Manpower. How much do we give? One man, two men, maybe a man and an elder. That was my point about the Valley Center type thing. You can send a younger guy with an elder alongside. Resources in terms of property. We rented these beautiful historic buildings. The churches themselves were dying. And I thought, well, this is great. We're getting, we're getting this Teddy Roosevelt's church in Washington, D.C. for $800 a month.
It's incredible.
And I thought, it's so cheap. It's the classic Dutch thing, right? Like, it's so cheap. Well, we paid for that.
Yeah.
Because we rented a church that was falling apart. And people would come in, and we wouldn't have AC in the summer. We wouldn't have heat in the winter.
Right.
And you visit a church like that once, and you're like, oh, that really... Like, you might not even register. You might think, I didn't really enjoy myself.
This is a good question. A lot of church plants start in, gyms, schools. You didn't do that. That's what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you went into the buildings right from the beginning. What are your thoughts on that? Where do you think? I have a conviction. We built a nice building here in Escondido. It looks like a church. I think things need to look like a church.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that? About especially plants that are doing it in schools. I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm just saying preference wise.
Yeah, I've written on this in Christian Renewal. I think not specific prescriptions, but I think we generally under-resource property. Mm-hmm. We think of it as an afterthought. And this is a virtue. This is one of those virtues of necessity. I think in the OPC, in the URC, a lot of us left established churches. And so you're poor, you're starting a new church life, and you meet in a gym or a school, and we say, church buildings are bad. Church buildings can become idols. Church buildings can drag you down, and there's maintenance. Right. All those things are true. There's a whole series of trade-offs, right?
Right.
But church, people have built church buildings for quite a long time for lots of good reasons.
Exactly.
And praise God, I worshiped here last night. This is beautiful.
Yeah.
And you're going to, I thought last night, we're going to be holding synod in that room.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We often go out and rent a college or something to do synod. Like, all the investment of this church is going to be a blessing to every single church in our federation this summer.
Right.
What a wonderful thing. So on the principle of under-resource, we'll pick a property because it's available or affordable in a bad location. We'll pick one with bad amenities. We moved into an Adventist church 2.5 years ago now, and this sounds kind of silly, but I was actually had a sabbatical when our church moved. And when we got back from the break, my wife and I, it was our first time worshiping in this church. She's like, have you seen the bathrooms yet? We take it for granted, right?
Yeah,
but we worshiped in churches where our toilets were clogged, or they were literally 80-year-old, 100-year-old bathrooms.
Sure.
And sometimes the cheapest isn't the best value.
I know. That's exactly right.
We don't buy cheap clothes that fall apart in a week or two. I mean, sometimes we're forced to, right? But sometimes it is.
Right.
And whether it's the geographic location, right? Real estate, location, location, location. And our established churches make the same mistake. A farmer gives a plot of land and we build a steel structure outside of town. That's great. But a church in the heart of town might encounter more engagement.
Right. It's interesting with Escondido. When this church was initially built, the old building, this was all farmland around us. Now the city's come to us.
Exactly.
So it's kind of nice. Yeah. We kind of got
that works. That's the long game. That's called playing the long game, right?
Yeah.
But so I think we should invest more. And I think that's where our classical committees can come alongside a young church planter, or an overseeing church and say, we have this new classical committee structure that's just getting off the ground and say, hey, we've learned this lesson over time. I know this looks like a good deal.
Right.
Let's take a second pass at your options. Mm-hmm. What about this place?
Right.
And so the bottom line is it should be a higher priority.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. Agreed. Okay. So first thing, what's second?
So yeah,
if property, the, if
oversight,
remember.
Manpower,
yeah.
Location, that sort of touch, leadership, the training of officers, time, you know, I think sometimes maybe it'll be a 10-year project.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe if it's a daughter church, it's a 2-year project. I know, you know, we have some, sort of quasi daughter church works in play now in the URC. And they were talking about organizing within 12 months.
Right.
Like, that's great. Like there's no single recipe, but I think sometimes we send someone out and we put them on a clock and we say, if you don't turn this around here. Now, I think you also, one of the hardest conversations, I think the last chapter, and you already raised this, is how and when do you close the work down?
Right. Right.
And that's a whole topic of itself. And
yeah. I mean, I have thought we haven't quite accepted at times that it should be shut down, and then we keep pumping money into it.
Yeah.
And, it just prolongs the inevitable. So what is that? When is that time where we say, okay, this is evidently the door is not open here, you know? So
I think like so many of these things, there isn't a single recipe,
you know,
you don't write down this number, this, you know, budget issue or whatnot. I think it's this idea of being well surrounded by people who have a lot of experience and having that topic on the menu.
Yeah.
If the letter of call has a provision for the planter, should the work close, it's not a doomsday scenario to consider closing the work.
Right.
It's just a healthy, you know, I was with my daughter on a weekend getaway, and she was with some schoolmates, and I was helping to chaperone with another dad. And I was in an inner tube floating down a river, and I looked up. And there had been a storm that had come through, and there were branches hanging off the trees and big gashes. And it was, you know, the edge of a river. Yeah. Trees are like over years falling into the river, that image. And I thought about, you know, all these organic metaphors for the church and Paul talking in Romans about the church being grafted in.
Right.
And, you know, churches have scars.
Yeah.
And churches have a lifespan. Mm-hmm. And just thought that, you know, if we understand that when a church sends out a lot of shoots and some die every season.
This is really good.
Right? Every season, this is how plants grow.
Yeah.
And those scars, the broken off branches, the limbs that maybe had a shot, the saplings, the seedlings, those aren't failures.
I want to tell you a story. I when I was in college, I went up to Humboldt State. You know, I had no inclination toward ministry. I was playing ball up there. I got involved in a plant, an OPC plant. Mm-hmm. The church had been a non-denom Bible church. The pastor's going through Romans, gets to 9, doesn't know what this thing is they're experiencing. Didn't even know historic reform faith.
Oh, wow.
The whole church becomes an OPC.
Awesome.
Pastor and all. And that thing, at that time, when I was there, it was just the church, you know, for me at least, isn't just about me, but it was the church I needed.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I was converted out of that ministry. We're doing Bible tables at the college. There's another athletes. Athletes were coming.
Praise God.
The church was booming. And then it was maybe, you know, I left, came back here, maybe 3 or 4 years later, church folded.
Mm.
But it served such a glorious purpose for all those saints at that moment in time.
Yeah.
I mean, I all those saints, we were, it was really sad that it folded. I didn't understand that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I looked back on it and I thought, do you know the blessing it was to so many there for us? We were learning the scriptures. I was converted under that.
Yeah.
And here I'm in a minister now.
Yeah.
Right. So that plant served a huge purpose in the kingdom.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
No, absolutely. We had a 15-year anniversary a year and a half ago. And one of the things I did, which I haven't done enough of, frankly, because DC is such a transitional place. Mm-hmm. You know, we've had well over 100 members. We're a pretty small church. You know, our membership's around 50 now.
Yeah.
We've had well over 100 members over our history.
Yeah.
And I sent a note out to the folks I could contact, and I said, share just a memory for our congregation today to hear about how God has provided for us.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wept, you know. Mm-hmm. You know how it is.
I do.
And we don't.
I do.
We don't stand often enough and say, our God has brought us safe thus far.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Amen.
A stone of remembrance.
Yeah.
And set up those milestones. And but there's a temptation there to, you said about the difficulty of closing a work down there. Yeah, but there are these two families, and they really love the Lord.
I know.
You know, sometimes you got to make really hard decisions, and that's where the guy on the field is in best position to make those calls.
Mm-hmm.
And if we had a truly church-centered vision of church planting, where the supports, the overseeing church, the whole classes are brought in. So you get the wisdom.
Right.
And it's not about, you know, green eye shades and dollars and cents and return on profit. That's not what it is.
Right.
You know, some of our urban church plants, because of the expense of cities or coastal church plants, right? They might lose money, quote unquote, for a long time. Mm-hmm. And we invest in overseas missions endlessly. Because we should. But, you know, sometimes those things can be warning signs, like yellow flashing lights on a dashboard. You know, like, well, we're not seeing the progress. We're not seeing the growth. And we got to make a hard decision.
Right.
Because, again, I think one big takeaway of my whole vision would be like, what if we planted half as many churches, but were twice as successful? And by successful, I'm not talking about the world's
means.
But what if we gave more resources to fewer plants and left fewer men in the lurch, left fewer men
I think
isolated.
Bill Green calls this a shotgun approach.
Yeah.
Shoot the shotgun, you know, hit it hard on a targeted thing. And instead of, you know, shooting everywhere.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. We need to be snipers, right? Like, let's dial it in and take more time. What does a sniper do? Take a deep breath.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to pull the trigger.
Right.
And then when you know, you're committed.
Right.
And so it is like so many things. It's commitment and vision. But I think we can take and we are taking steps. You know, we've taken steps. We're even now doing some revisions on our church planting manual. It's a it's a little bit out of date. With the guys that thankfully put it together for us, they drew on existing things out there, and I think it needs to be. I serve on our synodical committee as well as our classical home missions committee, and I think it. So that committee is working on that. We're going to be. Meeting next month face-to-face and maybe bringing some revisions to Synod, Lord willing. Hopefully, I'm not getting too far out ahead of my skis here. But, you know, I think we can grow. I think we can grow in the financing of works. I think, you know, we've had this bugaboo in the URC. I'll just call out an issue for us of, well, we don't want to go the route of central planning. We don't want to go to the route of central authority and committees because it does violate the spirit of our church order in many ways. But I think we've had a little bit of a maybe a confusion. I don't think centralized money means to be centralized authority. If you set up the proper rules and say any classically approved work has standing to draw on this fund according to a set formula, right? Like, there's nothing, I think, by our decentralized ecclesiology is actually a virtue. That's why we have it. We believe it's biblical, and I think it's a virtue. But if you're going to be decentralized and if you have a common project, you need to communicate better.
Right.
You need to cooperate better.
Right.
So we can keep that authority in the consistory, in the classes, but then build. I mean, look at the Southern Baptist Convention. They're congregationalists. They do more missions work.
I know.
I mean, think of the dollars that flow through that thing. Now, I'm not endorsing any of that, frankly.
Right. Right.
But what I'm saying is with a decentralized ecclesiology, we can still cooperate.
Yeah.
We can still work together and actually keep, you know, as long as we all trust that, hey, every classis has eyes on, we adopted a new provision. You open a field, you close a field, you get classis concurrence on that. And that's a very valuable stopgap. And you know, people look back and said, our last synod in Buffalo, we didn't make as much progress maybe as some folks wanted to do in the field of missions. I think we made great progress.
Sure.
I think that synod was a success. And we didn't move too fast for anyone. We need to all move forward together.
Right.
And I think the steps we took towards working more coordinated fashion in classes are really productive steps. And as I talk to these guys in these different classical committees, there's an appetite for setting up funds. And there's an appetite for internships and these kinds of things.
Yeah, I think, you know, and maybe this is an encouragement you can give to the more established churches. I just think we get in a rut. And we don't, just like anything, you know, we have to, it's like, you know, we had John Payne here preaching on, I said, I want kind of a missions emphasis. I want to get us thinking about that again, because we're not thinking enough about it at times, right? You should be thinking about it all the time.
Yeah.
But the busyness of life, church life, problems, all, we get sort of, you know, narrowly focused just on us, right? So what can I do?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, let me, I think you're asking me a question there. I'm going to take a little bit of a sidestep on a cooperative thing that we can learn from our brothers in the OPC. And I think this will be coming to Synod, Lord willing. Again, out ahead of my skis. But I know we've been talking about it in our classes. The OPC has a loan fund. it's very difficult for a small church or church plant to get a loan from a bank, almost impossible to build property. Right. I'm sure you know this, right? And the OPC has a fund that is when churches have savings or church members have savings, you can plant them there and get an interest rate. But they use those funds to make capital improvement loans or purchase loans to churches. Mm-hmm. In over 25 years, my understanding is they've never had a default. They never had a mispayment. And what they're doing is they're saying, like, look, if you're a church and you have, you know, a little bit of savings in the bank, why not put it in a bank where that money can be loaned out to a sister church? And so URC members and URC churches can invest in this work and what that has done over its history. And so we've taken that as a model, and the OPC has offered to help us. Mm-hmm. And so, Lord willing, that'll be coming to this year's synod.
Wonderful.
And a study committee, so we do it in an appropriate way for a URC loan fund. Mm-hmm. But developing something like that, that's it's in the background. No one ever thinks about it. Mm-hmm. I never heard of this idea till another church planter, Zach Wise, brought it to me a few years ago because he knew brothers in the OPC. Mm-hmm. And we have friends standing by. So yeah, that's, I would say all of us can get behind that at Synod.
Sure.
And it's not like a one-size-fits-all solution. It's a study committee to see if it fits us.
To do this ecclesiastically through the right channels is the way to go.
Absolutely.
And put that in place and encourage our churches to support.
But I think big churches... I love the idea of internships, and I think if you can bring a guy on, and again, maybe you get some outside funding to support it, maybe you have the resources to support it. You don't know what, you know, to go back to the sniper metaphor, all this gunfire. I mean, I feel like it's the Joe Rogan show. You know, we're talking about guns and just, bow and arrow.
We're just not cussing.
We're drinking.
Right.
I got to say, I thought there would be a drink involved, although it is early. You don't have to have the target picked out to buy your rifle.
Mm-hmm.
And you can buy, you can make the purchase, the investment in an intern. And maybe, and use that to free up, use that extra manpower to pour into that guy. And you might say, well, interns are more work. Well, in some ways they are. Mm-hmm. But to pour into that guy, and maybe he fills the pulpit 10 times or 20 times that year.
Yeah.
And the pastor uses those 10 or 20 weeks to invest in doing some demographic research or to setting up a committee within your council to explore options. And maybe at the end of the year, nothing happens.
Right.
But take the time picking out the target, right? Think of snipers. They build these nests, right?
Right.
And this is all new to me. I've never came up with this sniper thing before, but I like it. You started us on this path. You know, a sniper builds a nest and they think it's a place of opportunity, but they don't know.
Right.
They're guessing based on patterns of behavior.
Right.
And they're investing a lot of time and energy. And they might sit there for days. And then they see something and then they're ready. And I think we can build a lot of the structure that makes us more ready to move when the opportunity, when the Spirit provides those opportunities.
Good. That's really helpful.
And that's where I'm excited about the URC, because we are still in our infancy as a denomination. I used the bad D word, right? As a church, we are a church with our own culture, our own ways, our own history, our own confessions. Mm-hmm. And we're in our infancy and we're still building this system. And I think we can build a healthy system. Any system can be abused, but we can build a system with stopgaps and checks and balances that will reduce the risk of abuse and protect against it.
Right.
And this is a lot of the recipe is there in our church order.
Right. Right. Very helpful.
So
very helpful.
But we have as you know, I think oftentimes the guys who have been passionate about church planting have come across as critics or crybabies, and you're not giving enough money, you're not doing enough, nags. And and look, we don't want to be moralists in the pulpit. We don't want to be moralists in our strategy. Yes, we need a better vision, but we can build things together. We can be constructive and say there's opportunity for growth here that's really exciting, and we all want to grow. We all want to be doing better at our callings. You know, I'm sure you, 20 years in, you want your sermons to get better.
Yeah.
To be.
Do you ever look at yours 10 years ago? Would you preach those again?
I'm preaching through Ephesians for the second time.
Are you?
And I thought, you know, and it was because our consistory said, like, hey, we'd really like to hear Ephesians. And in DC, it's an entirely new church. You know, this was a decade ago, and it's such a core book. And I often think, oh, well, this will be great. I'll look back in my old sermon.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. New series. So. Well, I appreciate all your insights, Brian. You know, it reminds me constantly of our need to pray for you guys. You know, Paul was constantly talking about pray that the Lord would open a door, right? You think of Philadelphia, I've opened a door for you. We've got to pray that the Lord opens these doors.
And I want to say a word of thanksgiving to Rich Bout, who's our missions coordinator.
Yeah,
I think one of the little tiny things he built, you know, little laying bricks in a wall, right, was a prayer list that goes out every month to our churches. And I was here visiting Escondido and Santee churches in this county, and I prepared the bulletin for the worship service at my church in D.C., and I saw in the bulletin that we're all praying for the same guy.
Yeah.
And as a planter, when I see my name on that list, that is such a comfort. You don't even know.
Yeah.
And
well, we appreciate your work, brother. Thanks for coming on today. I look forward to this book.
Yeah. Give me a deadline.
I'll give you a deadline because when we get deadlines, we actually do it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, thanks for coming on. You know, it's raining today in Escondido. You get to go back to sunny D.C. soon.
So. Snowy D.C. Actually, we haven't had snow in years. And last week, we got like 6 or 8 inches.
Okay.
And so it was a good week for us. It's cold. It's a cold snap right now. But I grew up in Southern California.
Yeah.
I love the sunshine. Even the June gloom.
Aren't you in Tahoe? I thought you were Tahoe.
My folks retired to Tahoe when I was in college. So for the last 30 years, that's kind of been my home base.
Okay.
But I got to say, I prefer the seasons.
Yeah.
I prefer the change of seasons. And it's a reminder that time is passing and that we're not just all living in this Gnostic bubble.
California.
Yeah, California.
Well, thanks for coming on today, Brian.
Thank
Good
you.
To have you.
I appreciate it.